Welcome to Coffee with the Sarlows. We are your hosts of the show, Karen and Kelly Sarlo. Whether you're struggling with grief or you just need answers, we connect you with spirit to find relief, clarity, and direction in life. We can help you move forward.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm feeling wild.
I thought you were going to say, oh, wait a minute. Why wild?
Well, wild, one, my hair is unreal. And I mean like out of control unreal. And then also I did a Spartan on the weekend. So I just feel wild right now.
That's what I thought. I thought you were going to talk a little bit about your Spartan race.
No, I almost died. I don't want to talk about it. Right. I'm never doing it again. I'm retired.
Do we have to have witnesses?
I have lots of witnesses. It's okay.
People going to hold you accountable that you're not doing it again? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to step right into the show then.
Awesome.
I'm going to make up the name. Mm-hmm. We always do to keep confidentiality, of course. This person is in his 60s, and I can see him over Zoom, and I'm going to name him Lorcan.
Okay.
Meaning, that is not his name. So clearly, I say that because I've never heard this name before. Yes, if anybody is wondering how the hell Karen and Kelly get names, I go on Google search.
Yeah, we just Google ethnicities, countries,
yep,
like all kinds of things.
Yep, I go to Ireland, male names, Saudi Arabia, male. I pick any country I can think of.
Love it.
And I do that so that people who are listening, of course, can't sit there and say, oh, I saw her earlier. I recognize that shirt. That was my session that day.
Yeah, this is happening a lot on Instagram right now where people are like, I can't believe you posted that. What if he's on here watching? And I'm like, so many people, and actually specific to one reel, so many people have similar messages. Mm-hmm. And I mean, in a session, there's always specific validations for you. But like, so many people get told to travel. So many people get told to, you know, clean up their shit in their relationship. And if you're going to watch a reel or listen to a podcast and be like, oh my God, they did a session on me or a podcast on me, it's like, okay, whoa, like 300 people at least are probably watching this being like, yeah, that was for me.
Yes.
Good. We want you to take messages away and make it personal to you. Draw your own parallel. Make the changes that are going to be amazing for your own life. We are not here to out someone or to give away confidentiality so that people can say, that was this person, excuse me, in this city at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So go on with Lorcan, please.
Yeah. Okay. So after consent, Lorcan says to me, I'm here for medium. And he says, I'd like to connect to my mom. And his mom comes in and she says, okay, Karen, I have the situation that occurred on Earth and my personality on Earth. And I've also got the lessons I've learned and who I am here on the other side. So I always call it like...
alive mom, dead mom.
Yes. So that the client can understand the personalities and what they've learned and how they're going to present. Sometimes are so opposite that people can't believe it. Mm-hmm. But it's also the very reason that people call to speak to a medium. Mm-hmm. They want the exact opposite because they need something from the healthier version of who they are now. So Lorcan says to me, okay, and I explained, you know, you're going to get facts, blah, 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 and messages and all of this. And he was great. He goes, this is wonderful. Thank you. He was recording his session, wanted to share it with his wife afterwards and his own children. And he says, what does my mom want to share? And she says to me, sit tight. I actually need to show you a whole bunch of things, Karen, and then you're going to describe it. So I explained that to Lorcan, that I actually had to download the file and that I needed to see a lot of things. And he goes, no problem. I did. And then I started explaining to him everything his mom was showing me. She brings me back to when they're very young. So she shows that she's married and that she has several children. Lorcan, as far as I could tell, was just somewhere in between in a large family of at least six kids. He confirms that. And then she explains how her husband provided for her and for the children financially, and that he was there after work hours and on weekends, but he was not there. Mm-hmm. And he did his own thing. And
that so he was emotionally absent.
Yes, very much. And so you see where she really works. His mom works to get her husband's attention. She works to try and create connection. And you can see where she goes through devastating sadness and anger at the rejection of her partner. And where she also feels, thinking back to 60 years ago, where women were at, in that many of them did not have the financial ability or support to be able to leave their marriages. So she's also stuck in it. So she turns to each of the children for the emotional support. And the way that she explains and shows that she did this to each of the children is that she trains them by withholding. She withholds love. She withholds attention and affection to one child, and she lavishes it on the one right beside them. And the one right beside them is doing what she wants them to do. So if I want you to do your homework, I want you to not make any noise. I want you not to ask me for help. Just do your own homework. Don't bug me. Then that child gets the praise and the love and whatever the children are looking for that they deserve. Mm-hmm. And then she withholds from any of the other children to say, oh, I'm just going to withhold and you'll get the message. I'm not going to sit here and actually spell it out to you. You'll have to observe. You'll have to learn at a very young age what you need to do to get my attention or my love or my praise, anything from me. Mm-hmm. So I describe that to him and he goes, I don't know about that. My mom was pretty loving. My mom was pretty good. Like, she, you know, we had food on the table, and he's pretty defensive of her.
Mm-hmm. I find this really interesting, not to derail the story, but it's like you're trying to give a very specific example of withholding love. And a lot of adult children will go to providing basic needs to say, oh, no, no, my mom and my dad did it. You know, they did what they needed to. And it's like you just lowered the bar so hard in defense. And that's our ego, right? That's okay. That's normal for every human to want to defend people that we love or believe were supposed to love us.
Yes. And she explains right there in that little thing how she was training each of the children, mm-hmm. and that she wasn't actually loving any of the children.
Yeah.
And then he puts his head in his hands and he goes, oh, I think I'm getting this now. Mm-hmm. Like this. He goes, oh. And I said, does this sound like your wife? And he goes, you sound like my wife. Is that what you mean? And I said, yes. And I said, because your wife understands what your mother did to you. Mm-hmm. And she's been trying to help you and educate you. And he goes, yes. He goes, I wish she were here like right now. Because she would be looking at me like,
you might have just saved a marriage.
Maybe. I told you so. Like, mm-hmm. So he says to me, okay, you keep going. So then she shows that her and her husband own land. So I just see this big piece of land and it's like I am remote viewing it. And I can see when the land had one house on it. And then I can see where in little corners of the land, I see where houses pop up. And I see her children leave her house and go to one of the other houses, have a partner and raise their own family. And I said, your mom kept her supply close. And he goes, what did you say? Mm. I said, she kept her supply close. And he goes, oh, he goes, that hurts. And he goes, go on. I said, your brothers and sisters live on mom and dad's land. And there's always this that they live on the land. They've built houses on the land. But there's always a we owe mom and dad. Like, we have to go over and mow their lawn. We have to do things because we owe them. And he goes, yes. And I said, all under the guise that they love mom and dad and they're taking care of mom and dad. And he goes, oh, ouch. Oh, he's got all these responses like, holy shit. Can't believe the way she's willing to word it now. Mm-hmm. And I said, correct, because I'm wording it for your mom, right? Like she's now calling herself out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. As dead mom.
As dead mom. And he goes, oh, like this. He just kept owing. He goes, okay, go on, go on. And I said, okay, now, I said, you don't live there. And he goes, how do you know? And I said, well, I don't see you on the property. And I said, but what she's telling me is that the woman that you marry will not have any of her mother-in-law's BS. And that she is not going to be the second wife to your mother. Like that you, all of your brothers and sisters, put their mother above their partners and their own children and themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, that's correct. And I said, so your wife insisted you weren't living on that damn land. And he goes, yep. And I said, as a matter of fact, you don't even live in the same area. Like, how do you call that? Like province or state? Like I said, you don't live anywhere near them. And he goes, that's true. We moved away. He said, my wife insisted that we move like across country.
Oh, wow.
So there were no little quick, we're coming for the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
He said it had to be like that they were booking a flight,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. He says, we put distance between us and our children and my parents and all of my siblings and all of the family. He says, we just call it the family. And I said, okay. I said, so your mom is trying to validate that what you and your wife did was healthy. And he goes, really? And he was like stunned. And he just stopped there. He goes, could you go on then? And I said, no problem. So I asked his mom again, what else do you want to show? And she goes, my death. I said, okay. So she shows that before she passed, she shows that she had to go in and out of hospital. So she shows going to hospital, back and forth, but back to the property.
Mm-hmm.
And how people had to take care of her and also go to the property. Or pardon me, to the hospital. Then she shows that she was admitted to a nursing home and that the family goes back and forth to the nursing home. Then palliative, where she's at end of life care. And at that point, she shows me where the children and the grandchildren and everybody comes to see her. And I see him, my client, walk in the door at her end of life. And she's laying in the bed and I can see where she's conscious at some points. And at other times she's not. So she comes in and out. And I do see, and she does say where she's talking to them. And she has like really good moments of real clarity in speaking to people. She knows that she's passing. And he confirms all of this. And I said, you went there with an intention. And he goes, okay, but doesn't offer anything. And I said, she says, your intention in going there was that you thought that the deathbed was the confession bed. And he goes, ooh. Again, he goes, ouch. He goes, you're right. I said, you went across country to your mom's deathbed firmly believing that when people die and are going to meet their maker, they want to come clean. And they want to get out all their apologies and all the truths and they want to clear the air. And he goes, yep. And I said, and she looked you stone cold in the eyes and gave you nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he went, yep. And I said, she knew exactly why you went. She knew that all of your brothers and sisters were in the room, nieces, nephews, were all around, and how they knew how she had treated you. And she still refused, in front of all of them, to say a single thing to you. And I said, so you went in and out for a couple of days before she passed, when she was in palliative, thinking, well, maybe today. Mm-hmm. She'll be closer to death today.
It's still training, right? And this is why we still see people trying to please their parents after they've died.
Yeah.
And they come, would mom be proud of me? Did mom see the change I made? Did mom see the thing I accomplished? Is she proud of me now? Does she love me now?
And she refused to give any of it to him.
That's unfortunate.
So his mom tells him that. She says exactly what he came for, what his expectations were, the terrible hurt and pain and humiliation he felt.
Mm-hmm.
In front of all of his siblings, he didn't speak to them. He wasn't rude, but he didn't engage in conversation. So if somebody said, do you want a cup of coffee? He might say, thank you, yes. But they're like, he confirms that he's feeling humiliated in front of them, that he's kind of there to say, see, she will show you guys who I really am. You guys will see that you were wrong, that what I did was right, and she will not do any of that. So she shows up that day in his session to say, I was wrong in the way that I treated you. You came there and you deserved it. You deserved to have an apology. You deserved to be validated. You deserved to have all your brothers and sisters hear how hard you had worked to become healthy when none of them did, so that they could stay in my good graces till the very end, because what they wanted after I died was the money and the will. They wanted the land that they had all built their homes on. They wanted all of the financial stuff and her personal belongings. And she said to him, you deserved all of these things, and I withheld right to my death. And she says, I'm coming in today to tell you, I am so sorry for the way that I treated you right up till my death. Mm-hmm. When I told Lorcan that, like at that final moment, it really took him a moment, Kelly. It wasn't something that just sort of washed over him and he went, yes, or ooh. He had none of those responses. It was simply a man sitting there with like literally a vacant look on his face. And she and the guide said to me, don't speak. Mm-hmm. You sit in silence until he chooses to speak. He's processing. And make sure that your face is kind and gentle and don't look away. Just stay focused on him. He needs to be seen. Mm-hmm. He needs to be seen for who he really is. He's looking at you like, do you see me? Do you? He's looking at you, Karen. Well,
yeah, because you're the only witness to these messages.
Yep.
And this is why we call it a privilege or a gift, right? Is you are literally witnessing in real time the gift of the message being delivered. And there's no other witness than the human being themselves. And case in point with Lorcan being like, did anyone hear that? Did anyone see what Mom actually just said, and that she knows better and that she feels remorse? And like, we need validation as humans.
Yeah. And I said to him, Lorcan, you've recorded this. Mm-hmm. And he went, oh,
yeah,
I did. Like this, I said, you were made host of the session at the very beginning so that you could record this and put it on your hard drive or on discs, whatever it is that you want. I don't know if they're still called discs. No.
I hope you're not referring to floppy A's.
Pins?
No.
Sticks.
Anywho. She's just using words now, guys.
I am. I'm using my words. So I just said to him that he had the capability, he was in control, and that he could play this for his wife and his children. He could do whatever he wanted with this. He had it now in some form. Mm-hmm. He had his proof of her acknowledgement and her apology. And the truth, he had the truth. So then his mom said, I know why the other people were in the room, Lorcan. Mm. I know why they were there. When I was dying, my guides, my angels told me, this is why your children are here. When you are dead, they want the property, they want the land, they want their homes, they're going to fight. This is going to get super messy because you created a mess to keep them all controlled and on that land. And now they're all going to come to realize in a lawyer's office just what a wicked woman you really were. Hmm. And she gets to sit there and be able to go, okay, and you know, there's certain things I can't do now. She knows she's passed. So here she is just saying to Lorcan, I know the mess that I've created for all of your siblings after my death. You get to go home. You get to live your life. And I'm proud of who you are and the decision that you made. Turns out you are the healthiest and the one who has found love and worked out what real love is. Mm-hmm. And your brothers and sisters have no idea, thanks to me. Yeah. So she just said, I am grateful and I am glad you are free, Lorcan. Mm-hmm. And that's actually how his session ended. And then he sat in front of me and said, okay, is the session over? And I said, it is, hon. It is. Are you okay? And he goes, oh, he says, I want to turn off the video. So he turns off the video. He goes, okay, give me 1 second. He comes back, puts a box of Kleenex down, looks at me and he goes, okay. He goes, I need to cry. And he goes, this is a lot of years, a lot of decades. I'm going to have my first cry with you because you are the one that witnessed it. He says, I'm ready to go. He says, well, we're going to open the floodgates. And he just started crying. Mm. And I sat in silence. I didn't ask him anything. I didn't say anything. At this point, he's just asking me to be Karen, mm-hmm. Just the person, not the channeler. And I happily sat as Karen with Lorcan.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm. When Lorcan was finished crying, he said, am I allowed to call you back? Mm-hmm. Am I allowed to talk to my mom to learn more about what she went through so that I can understand why she raised us this way? He goes, my wife has been studying it and we think we have some textbooks answers and they may be all typical of my mother. He said, but I still would like to know. He says, because there are lots of things about my siblings' behaviors, my in-laws, like my sister-in-law, brother-in-law, nieces and nephews, their behaviors towards me, towards their cousins, towards my wife that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, that makes sense because there would have to be a lot of lies to run that kind of a life and that family. And I said, absolutely, you can come back. He says, I look forward to talking to you again. He says, I need more answers to be able to, I think, fully move the anger, the sadness, and the grief out of my body.
Yeah, I think it's also worth noting that gaining a deeper understanding of why someone treated you poorly is really important. There's a ton of benefit to that. And it doesn't heal you. Mm-hmm. It heals parts of you for sure, but it doesn't heal the parts of you that now needs conscious effort to rewire your own brain, to rewire your own belief systems, to allow you to choose different behaviors in this life mm-hmm. and access different feelings. And I think for a lot of people, they think, okay, well, I'll get the apology and I'll be okay. And it's like, no, that's the beginning. And that's not even really, like, that's the prequel to the work, right? That's where you also then get to sit there and go, okay, now I have a deeper understanding of why they did what they did. But I also now need to understand where that lack of love, that lack of connection seeped into other areas of my life to create low self-esteem, seeped into other areas of my life to create self-sabotage, to create the unhappiness or the lack of fulfillment that they end up feeling in their lives. And I hope that people don't just think it's a nice bow and you're done, right? In terms of a gift, the apology is so important. And I will also note, not necessary to do the other work I was talking about. So the good news is you can do the work without the apology. The apology is definitely healing in some ways, but there is more work to be done.
Kelly, thank you for explaining that.
Yeah. And actually, let me wrap this up in a little bit better of a way. You're giving clarity, you're giving direction, you're giving relief. Those are the three things that we promise when we're channeling, right? Because now at least Lorcan knows what direction to head in with the work he has to do. And then it's picking up the toolkit from there or finding someone to hand the toolkit to them to actually do the rest of the work.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people just don't know where to start, especially if you're starting like he did in grief.
Yes.
So I love the journey that you've kickstarted for him and that his mom also helped facilitate. Thank you for listening to Coffee with the Sarlows. If you enjoyed the show today, please be sure to subscribe on your podcast platform and leave a review. New shows will air every other Saturday.